FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
The Phil Nason Show, is on. In five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and we'll talk a lot of baseball with Rush Olson, the awards, Cy Young Award. We'll talk free agent signings, and we'll have a lot of fun doing it. But up first, the Portland Trailblazers squeaked one out against Charlotte, and it blew out Denver just like I thought they would. And joining me to talk all about that and more, from the number one Portland Trailblazers website, period, please welcome Dave Decker to the show. Dave, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm a little distracted. I think the Blazers are still scoring on Denver as we speak, so I don't know if the scoreboard goes high enough to contain what they're doing.
Man, that was a beatdown. I was watching it this morning. I knew that they would win big, but I didn't think that big, and they are still scoring. You can hear the balls bouncing in the background, and you can hear the voice of Bill Shonley saying, "Rip City!" I like that.
Yeah, he would have been hoarse after that game. It was just it was an absolute fiasco for Denver. They defended horribly. They just didn't even put up a fight. They left the Blazers wide open, and you cannot give open shots to this team. They will hit it every time. So it was almost comical. I felt bad for the Nuggets, but boy, what a demonstration of what the Blazers can do when the throttle's wide open and or when they're not defended.
I'll tell you what, they're awfully good. I think people have underestimated them. I didn't, of course, but I like the Portland Trailblazers. More importantly, I like the Portland Trailblazers fans, man. I'll tell you what, you guys have great fans. The Portland Trailblazers fans are fantastic people. I love them.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting group. Heather's roots, of course, back in the 70s and won a championship when nobody thought that the Blazers could, and that kind of galvanized everybody kind of into an us against the world attitude and brought the community together. And it's kind of been that way ever since. I mean, it's not as strong as it used to be, of course, but you still get that sense of when the Blazers are mentioned, it does something to Portland's cultural consciousness.
Yeah, I tell you, my dad used to dislike Bill Walton. My dad was a Calvinist, though, so a Baptist preacher. He didn't like him so much, but I love the Rip City team. And you know something? This team is really good. I enjoy watching them play. I got to ask you, though, we've been talking about the Charlotte Hornets all week long. Everyone's opined because it seemed that all my guests, the teams that they cover, have played Charlotte. What were your impressions of them?
Well, they fought hard. I like what they're doing chemistry-wise. Their big problem is they haven't got enough distance shooting, really. They've got some nice guards, but Aflalo's not been hitting. He hit against Portland, but he's been struggling a little bit. And, of course, Kemba Walker's the outside shot isn't his strong point. So they really have trouble spreading the floor, which is an issue in today's NBA because defenses will just pack it in on you. And, you know, the Hornets came within a whisker of beating the Blazers, probably should have done it. So you got to give them real credit. If their roster was a little bit more balanced, they could be dangerous.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's why I've kind of written them off this season. But you never know what Michael Jordan will pull off. But still, squeaking past them, that was a good basketball game. But I got to ask you. Now, I don't know the Blazers as well as you do, but I'm getting better. And the one thing that I've noticed, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, they seem to let up a lot of first quarter points. If they didn't do that, they'd probably be undefeated right now.
Yeah, they are this year. I'm not sure what exactly is up with that. I think probably they turn up the defensive pressure and switch the scheme a little bit in the second half, and that works, although they've been drifting toward an earlier and earlier start on that. So, you know, how they deal with screens, whether they're primarily switching or primarily trying to stay with their men, they adjust. usually in the second half. The energy goes up in the second half. They seem to really reassess at halftime, get their bearings, and then come out and just have really great second halves. But yeah, that first quarter is, it's not a matter of whether the opponent is going to score 30. They always do. It's just how much the Blazers are going to score in return.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I'll tell you something. This is, I guess you got to take your hat off to Coach Stotts, because that second half, these guys are beasts. They gave up 30. They allowed 36 points against Charlotte. And I can't remember how many they gave up last. Well, they didn't give up that many against the Denver. But this is the average. The last, over the course of this season, they've given up 21.3 points per game in the third quarter and 23 points a game in the fourth quarter, and are outscoring people. So that's got to be Stotts and his staff making those great adjustments.
Yeah, it is. And it's part of the personality of this team, too, I think. But yeah, Terry Stotts is emerging, I think, as one of the real legitimate coaches in this league. And hopefully he'll stay with Portland a long time, but he's more than earned himself another look from somebody. You know, coming into the Portland situation, people were scratching their heads about that hire and saying he was kind of a journeyman. He was a guy who was going to babysit the team until somebody else came along. And we all thought that's what he was hired for. Well, he showed us that he's got a lot of junk in the trunk, that he is one of the great offensive minds, I think, in the league. And his defense is slowly improving. It just seems like he's climbing up the ladder toward being one of the really good, respected coaches in the NBA.
Well, you can count me as one of those people who were shaking their heads at that hire, too. But, man, I'll tell you what, he's won me over. There's no question about it. I enjoy watching him coach a basketball team. Now, Nicola Batum, he's injured. How long is he going to be out for, Dave?
The guess right now is until Monday. He hopes to come back on Monday. So he'll be out for one more game, probably. That's Saturday against Brooklyn. And then hopefully he'll be back.
Yeah, that's not a big deal to miss him against Brooklyn. But Allen Crabbe has taken his place in the starting lineup. And that seemed to me a bit strange, too, right?
It's certainly a surprise move. A lot of people are scratching their heads. And, you know, he did not very well against Charlotte. He got abused defensively quite a bit. A little bit better against Denver, but then what didn't go right against Denver? I think the jury's still out on that. I'm not sure entirely the thinking on why Crabbe is starting. You would think instinctively you'd either go with the veteran Darrell Wright, but he's having a horrible start to the season and didn't do really well last year either. So maybe he's just not performing up to par. But then you also have Will Barton in the wings, or CJ McCollum if you want to move Wes Matthews to small forward. Either one of them could be a shooting guard. And the Blazers opted not to start them either. Maybe they're making them earn it or something. I have no idea. But Crabbe certainly is a surprise starter. And the jury's still out on how well that's going.
Well, it went well last night. There's no question about that, because everything went well. Damian Lillard, though, I think he's got an S on his chest, because he plays big so often. And last night he was, 5 of 6 from three? He just crushed it. And that's nice to see, right?
Oh, absolutely. He had a little bit of a shaky start to the season. But if you don't guard this guy, you're in trouble. And if you let him get going, you're in trouble even when you do guard him. Because when he gets the feeling from three-point range, he will hit it from anywhere with any amount of daylight. And at that point, you are in deep trouble, because he'll hit it over you, and then he'll drive on you, and then he'll drive and dish on you, and he can do all three things. And you're just not going to know where the next bucket's coming from. You're just going to know that it's coming.
You sure will. He knock you out. And this kid's got ice in his veins, too. He's not afraid to take that last shot either, and that's a nice thing. You know, when you look at this team, and I got to ask you something. Steve Blake, he's out there being the enforcer of the basketball team. Is that a good thing? Does that give Portland another additional identity?
Yeah, you're talking about what people don't know is there's kind of a little series of events. Against the Clippers, Blake had his worst game of the season, and he really got beat up. In fact, physically and on the scoreboard, there was a play where Chris Paul gave him a forearm shiver, which knocked him back into Blake Griffin, who was setting a pick, and then Griffin shoved him with both his forearms, so treated Blake like a pinball, and no foul was called, and I don't think Blake appreciated that. Then when Kenneth Faried did the same thing in the Denver game, kind of gave him a chuck in the back, Blake turned around and just knocked him on his tea kettle. It was good to see. And yes, the Blazers need some of that toughness. They're not going to intimidate anybody, I don't think, but people need to know that if they push the Blazers, they're going to push back, because when you get really good, people will try anything to stop you. And other playoff teams, for instance, don't care if they have to physically beat you up. If that's going to make you lose or shy away, they will do it. So the Blazers need to show right now that they're not going to cave to that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like a badge of honor, because Faried wouldn't go after a guy like – or he wouldn't go after anybody unless he knew or thought that he could – had to do it. And I thought that was great, the way he stood up for himself, his team. He's a good addition. I'm telling you, one more guy off the bench that can play like Kamen and Blake have, and I think the Portland Trailblazers have something this year.
Well, one more guy plays like Kamen does, and so far, and they'll be world champions. I mean, Kamen has been out of this world, but the season is still early, of course, and we got to see how fatigue, injuries, and just, you know, coming back to some kind of statistical normalcy will play out. But Kamen has been just phenomenal. I mean, he's not quite a point a minute guy, but he's getting close, and rebounds out the ears, and block shots. He's just been doing everything. If he could keep this up for 82 games, I mean, really, in a per minute level, he is doing some phenomenal work.
He could probably qualify for Sixth Man of the Year right now and win it outright right at this point of the season.
Yeah, which would be quite a shock. I mean, centers don't do that.
No, they sure don't. And the thing is, too, though, is that we have to remember that these are aberrational averages right now, and he's never had a season quite like this, and he usually misses a little bit of time due to injury, as most big men do. So we'll have to wait and see, but man, so far so good. Blake's been good. CJ McCollum, though, he was good against Denver, but then who wasn't? But this is someone that has to continue this, right? We have to see more of this to start praising him.
Well, we have to see more of something. I mean, he's had a couple of really good games, a couple of not really good games, some in the middle. The other day in an interview, I compared him and Barton both to kind of like a sine wave that just goes up and down, up and down. They're still doing that. And that was last year's pattern as well. Maybe you hope they go up and down on a slightly higher level than last year. That would be great. But until we see some consistency, you have to be really careful what you say about those two. They're opportunistic, and I think McCollum has gotten more opportunistic. He's gotten quicker and more comfortable in the offense, which is all to the good. But you really like to see some steady production that you can rely on before you start dishing out heaping helpings of praise.
I agree with that, too. Dorrell Wright, what's going on with him? I would have thought, honestly, instead of Crabb, that Dorrell Wright may have been the starter there, but Stotts went the other way. What's going to happen with Wright, you think?
Well, Wright and Portland have just not been a great fit, which surprises me, because I thought he was one of the guys with really that defense and three-pointer profile that would allow him to fit in Portland, and he just kind of hasn't. And I don't know whether it's the system, or he just thinks he's not getting enough playing time, whether he's in shape or what it is, but he's just not excelled here, and it doesn't seem to be. I mean, if any situation would call for him being put in the game, it would be Nicola Batum going down with an injury, and still he can't find any playing time. That speaks volumes.
Yeah, I think so. We may end up seeing Mr. Wright traded at some point. And, well, maybe that's best for both issues, or both teams. Brooklyn, in town. Brooklyn! What do you think about Brooklyn? Is this going to be much of a battle, you think?
It's always a battle with the Blazers. I mean, unless a team just rolls over like Denver does. You can never count on anything. That's part of the issue right now with Portland. And, you know, Brooklyn's got a good experienced backcourt. Brook Lopez is doing all right now. It'll be interesting to see him go up against his brother. So you look at them and you think, yeah, they've absolutely got a chance. The other thing is they can score inside a little bit, and they shoot the three-pointer, which means they should press Portland's defense a little more than the past couple teams have. So, yeah, it's going to be a fight. And, yeah, I think Brooklyn could absolutely win it. I mean, they're veterans. And they see these young kids trying to make a name for themselves, and they're going to be invested in beating them up. So we'll have to see what happens. The Blazers should win that game, but you never count on anything with Portland yet.
Nope, you sure can't. And then the Pelicans come to town on Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun. I honestly believe the Blazers will handle Brooklyn and New Orleans very easily. Dave, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
That was Dave Deckard. You can find him over at BlazersEdge.com. Coming up next, Rush Olson and I will finish the show talking Major League Baseball. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're all Forget, and you're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
Know what I mean, that's got to sure. be a big, strong big, thing. Strong
oh, that's thing. Gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epix Radio. Listen online, www.epixradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
Shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Major League Baseball are handing out their awards, and we're going to talk all about them. Rush Olson's here from Rush Olson Creative and Sport. He's going to be here for the rest of the show. What's up, Rush? How you doing?
I am great, Phil, man. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. It's great to have you here for the entire show. What's happening with I Am Douglas?
Well, we've been just pushing ahead. I'm working on setting up a meeting actually over in the UK next month with a potential contact that might help us move it along. So I'm pretty excited about that. And other than that, we've just been trying to post interesting stuff up to facebook.com/IamDouglas, with Douglas with two S's, by the way. And our Twitter feed and stuff.
Yep, and you ought to get over there to his Twitter feed. I finally did today, and it's all good. We're following I Am Douglas, and we're hoping for the best with your meeting next month.
Well, thank you for that, sir.
All right, now, Manager of the Year. Buck Showalter was named American League Manager of the Year, and Matt Williams from the Nationals was the National League Manager of the Year. Good choices, I think. Great choices if you go by the regular season, maybe. What did you think of those choices?
First of all, I knew you were going to bring that up, and you're right to do so. I it was hard to have a problem with either one of those choices. I think it's kind of fascinating because Buck Showalter has now won this award three times. The second time was actually when I was working for the Rangers, and he was the manager there. So that was back in 2004. And then the guy that won it in the other league used to play for Buck Showalter and talked about how Buck influenced him in terms of his organization and how he approaches that part of the game. And so I thought that was really just kind of an interesting matchup, an interesting pairing that it happened to be Matt Williams and Buck Showalter. But especially based on the regular season, it's hard to argue with either of those choices. The Nationals had the best record in the majors despite having a number of injuries. And then the Orioles, of course, have been a tremendous story since basically about the time Buck Showalter took over.
Oh, yeah. You can't argue with the process of, you know, that's the criteria. Regular season, they both had great years. Mm-hmm. Both of them did. Now, if you wanted to play devil's advocate, you could say that the East wasn't that strong and the National League East wasn't that strong. Compare them to maybe, say, let's bring these guys up. What about Ned Yost in the American League and Bruce Bochy in the National League? Both of them are in tougher pennant races.
Boy, I have to agree. Now, of course, both of those teams, again, we're looking at regular season only, ended up in the wild card. And is it hard to give someone the award over someone who actually won a division? Hard to say. You know, you could look at the levels of talent they each had. Let's keep in mind, too, Buck Showalter had to deal with his share of injuries. And arguably, you could say he even had to deal with more telling injuries and absences than did Matt Williams, because he lost Manny Machado for the year, lost Matt Wieters for the year, lost Chris Davis to the suspension. I mean, he had to figure out a way to win some games, especially down the stretch there with less than his full roster. And, you know, and I almost feel like you look at the AL East, it was down a little bit this year, but it's still the AL East. You still had five teams or at least four teams that were likely to be competitive any night, especially the first half of the season.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You know what? I'm not arguing about the selection. I you know what? I have this theory, as you know. Mm-hmm. That they should wait until after the season is over and include the postseason in some of these awards, especially for Manager of the Year, because, you know, some would argue, well, they have a World Series MVP, but they don't have a World Series Manager of the Year.
I agree. And I would suggest that managing in the postseason can be a little bit of a different skill than the regular season. But a good manager has to have that skill. A good manager has to know how to manage, like, his pitching staff in the postseason. He has to be aware of handling the media, let's say, when the glare gets a bit more intense. And so I agree with you. The Manager of the Year might be the single best award to award to be voted on after the postseason.
I think more of them should, but right now we're talking about the manager of the year. So if they waited till the end of everything, would they still have selected Matt Williams and Buck Showalter?
You'd have to say, I think you have to factor in the injury factor. And in that case, I think Buck Showalter still has a pretty strong case. Because he was in the postseason without his best hitters, basically, and managed to get them into that. They lost to Kansas City, but there was, he got them into that last round. I tend to think he probably still gets a nod, although really it's hard to say if they had handed it to Ned Yost that would have been a bad choice.
Okay, that's fair enough. We'll give you that one. But in the National League, Bruce Bochy had to deal with some injuries too, mainly to Matt Cain. He lost his ace. That's a pitching first team. That team's built around arms. Lose your ace, you got big issues. And they still strapped it together in a pretty tough National League West, the two-team race there. It's pretty tough. It's hard for me to give it to Matt Williams if they include the postseason because, Matt Williams' team got waxed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all healthy then.
True. And Bochy, you look at not only did his team win the World Series, so certainly you got to get extra credit for winning the World Series, don't you? And then you also think about there was a key managerial decision in Game 7 of the World Series that really had a lot to do with deciding it, and that was when to bring Madison Bumgarner in and how long to leave him in. And clearly Bochy nailed that decision.
Clearly he did, while Matt Williams was busy sitting on the couch watching TV. And that's what I mean. These guys don't get the awards that they deserve sometimes. Not to say that Matt Williams doesn't deserve to be the manager of the year, but...
Yeah, it's definitely nitpicking. Certainly all of these guys must have done something right this year. They must have done something to get to get their teams into the postseason and to have improved over last year and to have overcome whatever it is they overcame. So at this time of year, I often tend to feel like that there really isn't a bad choice for some of these awards.
Nope, you're right. But you know what? When you look at Ned Yost, he took a team, that wasn't supposed to do anything. Baltimore, a lot of people thought Baltimore would. Mm-hmm. And he put together a bunch of young guys. You know what? Congratulations to Buck Showalter and mm-hmm. congratulations to Matt Williams. And congratulations to Bruce Bochy for winning the World Series. And congratulations to Ned Yost for getting his team to the World Series while the other winners were watching on TV.
Yeah, those guys can take solace in their rings that they're going to get early next year.
Absolutely, yeah. And the bonus they get, too.
Well, and last time when Buck Showalter won the 2004 award, he merchandised that into a contract extension from the Rangers as well. So you never know. All four of those guys might have a chance to turn this into a financial gain as well.
Absolutely. Let the cash register ring. Rookie of the year. I don't think there's any argument here. Jose Abreu won the American League and Jacob DeGrom, the National League. I'm really happy that DeGrom won. I'm a Mets fan. So it was nice to see. And Jose Abreu, what are you going to say about him? He had a great two-thirds of a season for his rookie year, that's for sure.
Yeah, you can't. I think it's hard to argue with either of those two choices, especially Abreu. Abreu just came in and just started hitting at the beginning of the season. He just kept doing it.
Yeah, he sure did. And DeGrom, he had a tough start, but then he plays for a sorry team. And, with a bunch of hacks and $20 million third baseman who can't hit out of Williamsport. He put David Wright on a little league team and he couldn't hit a home run.
Oh,
I know.
You feel strongly about this, don't you, Phil?
Yes, I do. I'm a Mets fan. But anyhow, this was a great award. The one this is the one that's interesting too, because it goes back to my little pet peeve there about this whole awards thing. Clayton Kershaw wins the National League Cy Young. Bravo. Corey Kluber from the Indians wins the American League. Bravo. Now, Rush, Corey Kluber, I had him no matter what because no one really stood out in the American League, even in the playoffs. But And nothing to take away from Clayton Kershaw's amazing year. I love watching this guy pitch. We've talked about him many times this year, haven't we, Rush?
Absolutely.
But if the award was to be handed out and include postseason awards, would Clayton Kershaw have won the Cy Young, or would it have been Madison Bumgarner?
That's a tricky one. First of all, if you did the voting, let's say the night after Game 7, I think there's no question Madison Bumgarner wins because of how, you know, dominant and heroic that performance was that he put on in Game 7. The question would be, all right, if you take a couple days later, you take a step back, you look at the full body of work, how do you then evaluate it? And so you'd have to say that Clayton Kershaw had a tough beginning to the season. He had a tough end of the season, but in between, he was absolutely spectacular. And you have to decide whether that outweighs Madison Bumgarner's excellent regular season plus superb postseason. And it's actually amazing that it's even a debate, because normally you'd have to think that when Madison Bumgarner had the superb regular season he did and then had the postseason he did, that you'd be like, oh yeah, no brainer. If you were voting after the World Series, you'd be Bumgarner. It's kind of a testament to just how good Kershaw's regular season was that we can even entertain this as a discussion.
When you're 21-3 with a 1.77 ERA during the regular season, that's why we're having this discussion.
Yeah.
But he was injured for 5 weeks too. They bring that up as well.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't hurt in the playoffs.
I tend to think that Bumgarner would be the choice, because if I'm looking at the full body of work, and I kind of almost hate that, because I've met Kershaw, I've never heard anything bad about the guy. He seems like a terrific guy. I'd love to just, you know, say, but if I'm evaluating it from a baseball standpoint, I think I would pick Bumgarner.
Well, you know what I think, because I made a great case for it, I think, on my website for this the last time you and I talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I nothing against Clayton Kershaw's season. It was fantastic. It was like one for the ages. But Bumgarner took care of business when it mattered.
Well, and you know who else we can throw into this mix is Adam Wainwright, because Wainwright was one of the finalists for the Cy Young. He also had an excellent regular season. And of course, he didn't have the postseason he would have liked to have had either. So it's not like Bumgarner, you know, Bumgarner pitched through a postseason where everybody wasn't getting shelled, and it was just Kershaw. I mean, Bumgarner was clearly the best pitcher of the postseason.
He was. He's the only one we're talking about, really. The only reason we're talking about Clayton Kershaw right now is because he won the Cy.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'd still be talking about Madison Bumgarner's World Series. As we talked about at the beginning of it, this was going to be one for the ages, and it was. Madison Bumgarner, and you rightly pointed out when we talked about it last week, Madison Bumgarner did Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax-type stuff when it mattered most.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he get out of it? He's going to get paid, of course. But he's the best pitcher in baseball. He had to be. Look, he made it from beginning to end.
He did, and he got World Series MVP, and so that's one of the issues here, too, is will Kershaw get the National League MVP award to go with his Cy Young? And certainly if you were awarding it after the postseason, you'd probably be having the same discussion about Madison Bumgarner.
Well, as you remember, I opined that on the blog, too. I put him down for Superman, really.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic. How can you not? I mean, whatever. People can say what they like. Yeah, Rush is laughing back there because he got me going. That's okay, though.
Does he have a clause in his contract where he gets a bonus if he's named League Superman?
If he does, he owes me $5,000 a month so I can nationally syndicate this show, and then he wouldn't have to worry about these things. Because he would win every year after that performance.
Right. The Phil Mason's League Superman Award would be automatically go to him.
Absolutely. Because I was just marveled at what he did. I couldn't help it. I couldn't. But now we've got about 45 seconds left. We've got the American and National League MVPs today. Brantley, Martinez, or Trout in the American? Who do you think?
Give me Trout.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Even though Victor Martinez had a tremendous year too. You can't take anything away from Trout. It's about time he won it too. But I would love it if Victor Martinez won anyway. Now, National League. This is 30 seconds left, Rush. Giancarlo Stanton, Andrew McCutchen, or Clayton Kershaw?
That's a tougher one. I think I'll take McCutchen.
All right, I'm taking Madison Bumgarner.
Good choice.
No, I'll tell you what. It's going to be Kershaw. But it should be Giancarlo Stanton. Yeah, it should be Madison Bumgarner. Anyway, Rush, we got to take a break. But we'll be right back, and we'll have a much more milder discussion about the free agents that are out there.
No, we won't.
No, we won't. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of NBA talk and a lot of baseball talk. Rush Olson from Rush Olson Creative and Sport is here once again to torment me and get me geeked up about my crazy positions in life and in sports. Rush, welcome back, man.
I'm very happy to be here and to provide that service for you.
I know you enjoy it. I heard you back there laughing. It's a good thing we're not in the same studio. We would have big trouble with the engineering people. Okay,
right.
Now, we've got some interesting free agent signings right off the bat. Right out of the bat, the stupid Mets, they signed Michael Kadire. 2 years, $21 million. Good signing or a bad signing?
Of course, all of these will be, you know, play out during the season. But I don't know. The guy can hit. I mean, and he's got a little versatility to him. So he might end up being a good signing. I think one thing that people have to remember when you're a team, now the Mets may be a little different because of the market they play in. But when you're a team that's been down, it is hard to get players to come play for you, even if you have money, because they want to go somewhere where they can win. And unless it's their hometown or something like that, it's hard to get free agents. I went through this when I was at the Rangers. We made offers to the likes of Roger Clemens and all sorts of, and Barry Zito and all sorts of free agent pitchers, worked very hard on trying to get them to come to Texas and threw massive amounts of money at them and couldn't get them to do it. And so that's the prism through which I view this Mets signing, is they said, you know what, it may be hard to get free agents to come to play for us, because we haven't been very good the last few years. We need to take what we can get. Michael Kadire wants to come play. We feel this contract is reasonable and he's going to be an asset to us. Let's pull the trigger.
I think they ought to point that trigger at somebody else, mainly Sandy Alderson. That was a dumb signing. You know what? This is the problem with the Mets and Sandy Alderson. He just jumps at the first fish that hops out of the boat. Look, man, stay in the boat. Throw those little guppies back and catch a real one. This is ridiculous. This is the guy who's 35 years old. The last two seasons, he hasn't even played very much. Okay, he's bad at 330. He's versatile. I opined about this on my website the other day. In fact, the last time you were kind enough to be on the show. And I think that this was just a stupid signing. And you know something? This is why I don't want to be a Mets fan anymore, Rush. I really don't. After all these years, I've decided I'm just going to stick to being a media guy.
You're not fired up to watch Michael Kadire hit every night?
Nope. Because he's not going to hit every night. He's going to be hurt half the season, unfortunately for him. But he's 35. You know, these guys don't get healthier. They usually break down further, right?
That's a very good point.
And this is how I should be working for the Mets. They hire anybody up there.
Well, I mean, you are a little older. I don't know if you can still hit or not.
I have a great two-handed backhand still. I was thinking more along the lines of being the general manager.
Oh, okay, I see.
I win my fantasy leagues. Does that count?
It can't hurt.
Yeah, but I get to play with the big boys. And nobody wants to play for the Mets. How would I get people to play for the Mets?
Well, that's my point, is it's hard to get people to play for the Mets. And so when they said that this guy, here's a productive player, that is willing to play for the Mets, let's go ahead and get him.
Yeah, all right. Okay, that's fair enough. Now that I've completely gone into cardiac arrest, Victor Martinez, he wasn't out there long. The Detroit Tigers re-signed him, and I'm a Tigers fan too, so this is a good thing. This is why my heart's going back down now.
Mm-hmm.
4 years, $68 million. Now, he's 35 too, but like Jonah Carey from Grantland said, Mike Ilitch doesn't care. He's 85 years old. He's a billionaire, and he doesn't care what happens in 4 years.
That's I think it's good that you brought that up, because that was exactly what occurred to me when I was looking at the two moves the Tigers made this week. One was the re-signing of Victor Martinez. The other one was making the trade for Anthony Gose with Toronto. They sent a good prospect for Toronto, or to Toronto, for somebody that you wouldn't think maybe matches up with that on paper. But they did it because they want to win now, because Mike Ilitch wants to win now.
He sure does. And he, you know what? He had a hard time this year. That was just a bummer. I mean, he had three Cy Young Award winners, the last three, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them got shellacked in the playoffs. Boy. But this is a good signing. You know why? Because this is a guy. Now, you said something to me in the email today about a comparison with Edgar Martinez. And I think you're right, but I'd like to hear you elaborate on it first, though.
Well, it occurred to me that Victor Martinez and Edgar Martinez are similar type players. And so I went back and I compared their seasons from age 36 to 39, which is what this Victor Martinez contract was going to cover. Because one of the things you always look at when you look at a long-term signing for more than a year or two is, okay, especially for an older player, is how will that player be performing at the end of the contract? How much are you going to be overpaying him at the end of the contract? And so I thought, you know, the Victor Martinez is going to be a primary DH. He can still catch a little bit and play some first base, but he's primarily going to be a DH. And so I thought Edgar Martinez might be a pretty good comp, both high average hitters, high on base guys, some power, and went back and looked. And from his, if you got what Edgar Martinez produced from his age 36 to really 38, but also into his 39 season, you'd be pretty happy with what Victor Martinez brought. So in that prism, I looked at it and I thought, you know what, I think this is a pretty good signing. Plus, Victor Martinez is supposed to be a good clubhouse guy, apparently fits in well with that team. So I think from Detroit's standpoint, this made a lot of sense.
Oh, I think so too. You know, last season he played 35 games at first base and he caught two games. One of them was a complete game. The guy can still play.
Well, and I think that's a tremendous asset to have on your team, too. He's basically a third catcher. Now, you don't want him catching a lot of games, but if you get late in the game you've got the choice to pinch hit for your catcher, you have that option. Because if your other guy gets hurt, well, now you've got somebody you can slide in there in Victor Martinez. And I as a manager, I would like to have that.
And with Avila getting a concussion every 2 weeks, this is important to have that third catcher. That poor kid got his bell rung more times than the Sistine Chapel.
Agreed.
I mean, that's horrible. So this was a good signing. And you know what, this trade, though? You know, trading Austin Jackson, I thought it was kind of stupid. And, well, yeah. But anyhow, they finally made a move, and they traded another one of their future players away, second base prospect Devin Travis. And they got Anthony Gose from the Toronto Blue Jays, who had a really decent year this year.
I'm sure they wanted to upgrade their defense, and they've now done that. They hope that he's going to maybe improve offensively, although he's 25. We'll see how much better he'll get. But it's still, I thought it was a little bit of a reach for the quality of the prospect this kid is supposed to be. But, you know, hopefully... you know, if you're a Detroit fan, which I'm not, but if you're a Detroit fan, I hope it, you know, you hope it works out. And certainly it is a win now move. It is a let's win in 2015.
Well, yeah, just like we said before, you know, Mike Ilitch is 85 years old. I think he wants to win now. He's not going to be, he probably won't be around in 10 years. He doesn't care about the future. He cares about now.
No, and I'm not I tend to not hope that happens, because I'm not terribly taken with the deal he's perpetrated on the city of Detroit for his hockey arena, but I certainly understand it from his standpoint of why he would say, look, let's go all out. I want to win now.
Yeah, that's fair enough. We'll get into the hockey thing some other day.
And if you're a player, by the way, that to me makes Detroit a very attractive free agent destination, because you look at that and you go, hey, you know what? This guy wants to win now. If I go here, I'm not going to be part of some rebuilding program next year. I'm going somewhere where this guy is willing to do whatever it takes to win a World Series next year.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, too. And Detroit is a great place to play. You know, I'm wondering, though, to be honest with you, I'm wondering what Max is going to do. Max Scherzer, what is he going to do then? This is the destination to be. Are they going to be able to resign him?
Wow. You know, that's a tricky one, because they offered him a big contract that he did not take. He now has, of course, a lot of options. I mean, he's got a good track record, and you've got some teams that might be looking for pitching that would be willing to pay something. It would not surprise me, though, to see him go back to Detroit. I haven't read anything where he disliked being there. Certainly, he's got a good chance to win, maybe better than anywhere else he could sign next year. And so it wouldn't surprise me to see him back there.
Yeah, probably not. Now, the Brewers made some news. They they exercised their 2015 option for Aramis Ramirez. who's 36 years old, but he had a pretty good year when he was healthy.
And he wanted to come back. There was a mutual option, and you don't see those exercised very much, but you know, they both decided it was a good deal, and so he decided to come back, and they decided they wanted it back. And you know, I mean, he's a solid hitter. You could do a heck of a lot worse there than Aramis Ramirez for sure. So I thought it was a good move for the Brewers.
He had a great first half, didn't he? He ended up in the All-Star game. That was tremendous first half. But then the second half, he, like the rest of the Brewers, went south, unfortunately for them.
He's got a track record, though. I mean, and certainly they've had him there, so they know whatever it is they need to know about his, you know, work ethic and attitude and all that sort of thing. So if they re-signed him, I think they probably felt pretty confident that they could rely on that long-term track record that he has.
Well, heck, if you put you can put the devil next to Ryan Braun and make the devil look good, too. But, I mean, not saying that Aramis is a devil or not. But still, I'm on a roll today, boys and girls.
Well, you are.
I'm enjoying myself today. This is a good day. Anyhow, that's a good signing, though. I like Aramis Ramirez. All jokes aside, he's fantastic. He's got such a great work ethic, too. And Mr. Brewtown comes on here in the summertime during the season, and he talks about it, too, is the work ethic and how great an example he is to the younger players. And that's just as important as a guy who hits 30 home runs a game or 30 home runs a season. So I think that's good. Now, we've got another signing. The Mets went after him last year, signed him to a $7.5 million contract, and then released him. Chris Young is now a New York Yankee once again.
You know, he's another Highland Park guy, same as Clayton Kershaw. I knew him from when he was with the Rangers. He was well liked among the marketing people because he was a very easygoing guy, easy to deal with. So from my standpoint, I'm like, great. He got some money from the Yankees. He really improved his value last year. And I'm sorry it didn't work out for the Mets. I'm sorry he wasn't able to do his thing for them. But, you know, he's maybe pretty good for the Yankees.
Yeah, he put the pinstripes on and jacked the bomb right off the bat. He was amazing. And he did great. Now, here's the other thing the Yankees did. They traded one of their backup catchers, Francisco Cervelli, to the Pirates for lefty Justin Wilson. Now, I wonder how much that has to do with Alex Rodriguez coming back. Because if you remember, there was a rumor going around that Alex Rodriguez snitched on Francisco Cervelli and got him 50 games. I wonder how much all that has to do with any of it, or is it really a business decision, a baseball decision?
Well, clubhouse chemistry is a baseball decision. And if they thought that it was going to cause trouble, certainly Alex Rodriguez is about as untradeable a player as there is. If they thought it was going to be that decision, I think, you know, if it was going to cause problems, I think they had to make the move.
Yeah, maybe so. But you know what? That also tells us that the Pirates know they're not going to be able to re-sign Russell Martin. And they're looking to fill a gap. And Russell Martin's going to go to somebody for big, big dough, man. And that's a good thing because that guy knows how to call a baseball game. If you remember two seasons ago, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the biggest reason for that pitching resurgence was them throwing to Russell Martin every day. He's going to go for a big dollar, and I think he's going to wind up with the Cubs.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think the Cubs have a big need in that area, and he would be a guy that would fulfill it, especially if you bring in some of those young pitchers the Cubs have. Having somebody like Russell Martin to work with them, that could be pretty valuable.
That would be very valuable, and I'm telling you right now, watch out for the Cubs. I opine that on my website, too, if you're interested, because I like the Cubs. I just don't like the fact that they've decided to part ways with WGN. But that's another issue altogether. Rush, I'll tell you what, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for being on the show with me.
You bet. My pleasure, Phil.
Thank you. That was Rush Olson. You can find him at rusholson.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank Rush and Dave Deckard for putting up with me today on my silly Thursday. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.